Picture this. You and your crew are traversing the Atlantic Ocean on your merchant ship. You spot something up ahead and grab the spyglass. Is that another ship? Well, that's not terribly uncommon, you think, but as you draw closer, you realize a few of the sails have fallen, and there doesn't appear to be anyone on deck. You call to the ship, announcing your presence. No response. Is there no one on board? Wait, is that your friend's ship, the Mary Celeste? Where is he? Where's the crew?
You form a boarding party and investigate. As you reach the ship, things are silent. The only noise to be heard is the creaking of the hull, the rolling of the sea, and the tapping of the sail against the mast. It's too quiet. You go below deck, and it's just as deserted. Something isn't sitting right about the situation. There's a sewing machine with a baby's dress half-sewn. The hem is still mid-stitch. The captain's sheathed sword remains under his bed. The logbook is just sitting there. The last entry? 10 days ago.
Where did the crew go? What could have caused them to abandon the ship so abruptly without any signs of duress?
Did they leave the ship willingly? What happened to the Mary Celeste?
That's next on Hysteria 51.
They say I'm disturbed.
From city to city, an incredible hysterical panic spread.
I think we're getting into a weird area here.
Will you tell these fools I'm not crazy? Not crazy.
This hysteria.
You can't handle the truth.
Brain is gone.
This is Hysteria 51. The truth is out there.
It's alive.
But you won't find it here.
They're coming for you. Look, there comes one of them now.
Welcome in, Hysteria Nation, to the podcast that's never discovered a ghost ship. But we took a Carnival cruise once that was almost as scary. This is Hysteria 51.
We did take a Carnival cruise.
Broadcasting from the lower fourth dimension, otherwise known as Chicago, we're your hosts and captains on this curious case. I'm John Goforth, and this is Brent Hand.
The curious case it is, John. Where do these people go? Why would they abandon a perfectly good ship? And were they out of rats and hardtack? I think that's the big question.
That's why I'd leave.
Of course.
I love hardtack.
Exactly. Why would they leave thousands of gallons of perfectly good alcohol? Stupid meat sacks.
That other voice you're hearing is the third host of this show, and the only one who would have drank the denatured alcohol. He's the one and only Conspiracy Bot.
I built C-Bot in my lab to help make this show better, but instead he spends all his time drinking and messing things up. He's like an alcoholic child with a homicidal streak.
That's a really good description, actually. Yeah.
That's tough but fair. Anyway, back to what I was saying. No one in their right mind would get on a boat. But if they did and it had thousands of gallons of denatured alcohol, they'd be insane to leave it there. I just bought 3,000 gallons of the stuff and it was like $93,000. Thanks, Brent.
I'm fairly certain you're lying, but just to indulge, why would you have bought 3,000 gallons of denatured alcohol?
Well, the government says I can't sell my current formulation of bot booze anymore, so I needed to go in another direction. Denatured alcohol is fairly cheap, available on Amazon without a permit, and tastes great.
Dude, you were selling rubbing alcohol before and killing people. Now you're going to sell denatured alcohol and do the same thing? Wikipedia says it has additives to make it poisonous, bad-tasting, foul-smelling, or nauseating to discourage recreational consumption.
I know. Great, right?
To discourage. That is what's sad. We don't want you drinking this. We added things to this to
make
you
sure
sick.
That you didn't drink this because it is poison.
Only losers and nerds are too pussy to drink my swill.
Losers never win, John. He's right.
They also stay
winners
alive.
Never drink denatured
alcohol. Yeah. Here's the thing. He tried once with rubbing alcohol. He killed people and he got stopped by the government. I believe you were involved in that subpoena.
Now, my lawyer has told me I shouldn't talk about it on the show.
Oh, fair enough. Fair enough. You can cut that part out. Now he wants to do the same
thing.
Thanks
to my lawyer, Sam Culper.
Here's my question. Is this like Coke versus New Coke? The few people that survive drinking bot booze that are still buying it, are they going to be unhappy with the new formulation?
You know, they might be. They're going to riot and massive tearing up of everything, I imagine, because everyone just loves it so much. Especially the taste of the things they add to make it nauseating.
Once it eats away their insides, they are easier to turn to slaves.
Oh, so that's why you're doing it. You know, you just admitted you're intentionally harming people.
If anyone's listened to the show, I think they know what's going on. I mean, I was in the hospital 2 years ago.
I think you have another subpoena coming, Brent. He said he spent the $93,000 from you.
Yeah. Anyway.
Honestly, Brent, I think the whole bot booze thing is a sinking ship.
Well, that's right.
And speaking of ships, I think it's time to get to the Mary Celeste.
And we aren't going boating alone. Oh, no, John. We're joined by fellow Lower Fourth denizen, David Boom Boom Flora, I think is your proper...
No, I prefer
nom de plume.
I prefer Master of Mayhem, Kentucky Tickler.
I thought we figured this all out on the last time he was on. Yeah.
If you're not familiar, David is the host of the wildly popular Blurry Photos podcast.
Wildly popular, popularly wild,
popular.
Ironically,
it's more than a brute of a podcast.
Would you say it's famous or would you say it's infamous?
I would say it's if it's infamous, it is more than famous. So.
Mm.
I got to think about
that. That's an answer.
I hate you so much.
I just gave you an answer to your question.
That's a good response, Brent. That's an answer.
We brought him on to talk this nautical mystery this week. If you listened previously, you've been on our Spring Hill Jack episode. You were on our, what was our other one that we did with you?
We've done a couple.
Yeah.
It was John Teeter.
That's right. And then we were on
Teeter, the time traveler.
Yes.
We were on your episode talking Hollow Moon.
That's right.
That's
very
right.
Fun episode.
We did one other with David, and I don't remember what it was right now.
I think we just shoot the shit a little bit on the...
Oh, we probably didn't up all night. You know what? Go out, Google that.
We're so good at what we do. We just hit it and quit it.
All right. So we're dealing with an abandoned ship this week. I don't think they had that back in the day.
They did. You turned this huge crank.
Yeah.
Oh, get off the ship. It's already people are like, I like this show.
I am subscribe.
So this bitch was an American merchant brigantine.
Gotcha, bitch.
Say it with me now.
Brigantine.
Yeah, she was discovered adrift and deserted in the Atlantic Ocean off the Azores Islands, some of my favorite islands, on December 5th, 1872.
A brigantine, tell us the difference between a brigantine and a anything else.
In maritime law, I don't have to.
I will invoke the fifth in maritime law. Yeah. Brigantine's like a little brig, though, right?
I don't know. I mean, it was a transport ship.
It's a full mast, multiple sails. I think it's like a hybrid of a couple other types of ships.
Yeah, like the back sail was triangle or something like that, right?
Yeah.
Instead of having like three masts full sail.
I only know.
Actually.
I only know French nautical vessels, so
much bigger than a sloop. How about that?
The prow is actually right, at a 45-degree angle. Mm. I don't even know what that means. But all right, so
certainly not a caravel. Am I right, gentlemen? Am I right? Indubitably.
Next week on the Nautical Hour.
Yeah. So this guy, it was found adrift. Enter the Canadians. So this,
I love the Canadians, but I hate their bacon.
The back bacon,
Canadian bacon.
That's back bacon.
It's ham.
That's
back
right.
Bacon.
It's ham.
I call it the de gratia. I don't know if that's
de gratia.
I say de gratia.
De gratia.
De gratia. I think that's fine.
The de gratia or de gratia. We'll say both. They found her beat to shit, but still seaworthy condition under partial sail.
Man.
With her lifeboat missing.
If you could describe me better, I'd like to hear it.
Right?
Beat to shit.
Beat to shit, but seaworthy. And missing a lifeboat.
Turns out they had been circling yelling sorry for hours and got no response, so they decided to board her.
Sorry. I'm sorry to bother you.
Sorry, eh?
Anybody sorry.
Are you guys out?
Don't mean to be rude, but you okay, hey?
The way they describe it, beat to shit, but seaworthy.
Now, that might have been in my own terms, but it was disheveled, let's say.
Isn't that probably every boat of that time?
I mean, I don't think any of them.
Not if everyone was, you know, swabbing the poop deck like they're supposed to be. Doing.
You just said that so
that
you could say
a
poop deck.
Term, John. It doesn't get your mind out of the gutter.
It doesn't mean that you didn't say it on purpose.
Poop deck?
Yeah. Oh, get this, though. Here's another thing. The last entry in her log was dated 10 days earlier.
That's actually a week under maritime laws.
That is not true.
It's not true
That's
at all.
Not true at all.
Prove me wrong.
You know what? We're just going to go.
He forgets that Google exists. Yeah.
So she had left New York City for Genoa on November 7th.
Ooh. And I hear they have good salami. Yeah.
And when they found her, she was still stocked
Genoa
well
salami.
With provisions. All of her food and everything. There's plenty of stuff there. Her cargo of denatured alcohol was intact, and the captain and crew's personal belongings were still undisturbed. And sadly, none of those who had been on board were ever seen or heard from again.
I would actually prefer Vincent Price laughing maniacally there.
None was seen or heard from again.
Like the... yes. Yeah. Like the beginning or end of...
Thriller?
Thriller, yeah. Oh, actually, we're not allowed to talk about Michael Jackson songs anymore.
Mm. Oh, that's right.
Yeah. They don't exist anymore.
They don't exist.
Well, since that Finding Neverland, whatever. Leaving Neverland.
Leaving Neverland.
Because you wouldn't want to find it.
So, in a nutshell, that's kind of the story. You know, it's crazy. Ships are found all the time. Back in the day, shit happened all the time. This one just sticks out because it's such an odd story. It's one that has persisted through time.
And there was one additional aspect that kind of adds to the creepiness.
No, I covered all of it.
I'm sorry. Moving on. John, you had something to... Well, there was apparently a long rope hanging off of it attached to it that they found trailing in the water with the end of it was frayed.
Yeah.
So that, I mean, obviously that adds some creepiness to it.
Lifeboat was missing.
Well, didn't you ever see Cabin Boy? They always had him on the little raft behind the boat.
Yeah.
That was a, who's the guy?
Chris Elliott.
Chris Elliott vehicle there.
Yeah. You're right. There were some other creepy things. Now, if you've read about this, you might have read Eggs Were Still Cooking. There was this faint smell of tobacco
right,
in the air.
Yeah.
That actually all
chairs
came...
were overturned. Crows were on the mast.
but like there was a bunch of detail that you might have read that it was like literally abandoned 3 minutes ago.
Yeah.
There's two problems with that. There's two problems. The first.
Number one, 3 minutes is like 2 hours in maritime.
Hell yes.
But
hell yes.
In all seriousness, it takes a while to sail up from one ship to another. They couldn't have just left 3 minutes ago, and the people sailing up wouldn't have seen it. Like,
right, right. Yeah.
The crew were Navy SEALs.
I mean, but they escape out the bottom. Second, that actually most of that detail comes from a story written by Sir Arthur Conan Doyle. He wrote a story called The Marie Celeste, not the Mary Celeste, The Marie Celeste,
Pretty Marie Celeste.
Which he basically tells a much more haunting version of this story, but it's all fiction. And that's where they get that you could still smell burning tobacco as they got on, you know, there were still hot coffee steaming out of its mug.
I don't know
if
you had my grandparents' house, it always felt like burning tobacco, you know, so I don't know.
And coffee and ham.
Yeah.
But there certainly were enough creepy...
But it was based on this, right?
It was based on this, the true story. Calling it the Marie rather than the Mary... Was
got around
nod.
His copyright.
Yeah. It might have been a nod to the fact that his was fiction.
Right.
You know?
Right.
But regardless, those details
that's
aren't true.
Sir Arthur.
However,
Conan
there
Doyle.
Were. I believe I said that.
I know. I'm just saying that's Sir because he's known for the Holmes stories, Sherlock.
Mr. Holmes.
That's him.
Right. That's him.
what is that from?
Sherlock Holmes. The,
the only one they ever made.
The clip.
The
Robert Downey Jr.
The Robert Downey Jr. one.
Mr. Holmes.
Mr. Holmes. There were plenty of details that actually were creepy. Like we mentioned in the intro, the fact that there's a children's dress being that's halfway through being sewn in a sewing machine and just left there.
And the sewing machine's oil isn't overturned.
Isn't overturned and open. Right. So there's plenty of creepy details.
Yeah,
we'll get into a lot more of those. There's a lot with the captain. The captain of the De Gratia was friends with the captain of this ship of the Mary Celeste. There's a bunch going on.
Yeah, we're going to get into all that. Since we need to get into that, let's head to break. But when we come back, What's her backstory? What could have happened to this intrepid crew of the Mary Celeste, who was only on what was supposed to be a 3-hour tour?
That's coming up on
Hysteria 51. I want to know what happened to the professor.
I want to know what happened to Marianne and Ginger.
Hola, David. Me llamo Brent.
Bonjour, Brent. Je m'appelle David.
You didn't do Spanish. I thought if we were going to do this together, we'd do the same language.
Oh, sorry.
that's on brand for us.
I just thought romance languages was the key.
Everything I say is romantic, and that is thanks to Rosetta Stone. You guys, we've been touting these things forever. We love Rosetta Stone, and we actually are users. David, you've really been using it even for longer than I. What's your experience been like?
Oh, it's been great. The thing is, you really get to learn how to speak and think in that language with it. So it's very high on pronunciation too. So you can, you know, learn how to speak.
And you know, our show is all about proper pronunciation.
In that pronunciation. Yeah, that's right. But they designed it for long-term retention, you know, if you don't get the pronunciation right, you say it until you do. And then, you know, that just seeps into your head.
Well, and that's why, you know, this has been trusted by experts for 30 years, and there's over 25 different languages that you can learn, and people, millions and millions of users use it because, like you said, it does seep in and you're using it with, you know, you get speech recognition and it hears you. You get to use like the built-in true accent features that gives you this pronunciation, which is super convenient, and you can do it at your own time. And I don't know if you know this, but I'm all about value, and you get a one-time purchase, 25 languages. If I learned all 25 languages, I'd be so confused. Or really cool. I'd go in and out.
But you'd be real marketable.
But literally, though, this is something that we use, and both of us have given the seal of approval because we want to do this long term, and it's something that it works, you know. And we don't do long term stuff like this. And this is the one that we've chosen, and we love it. So, all you guys got to do, don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now, as we've told you 1,000 times, and it's always now. Right now, get started. For very limited time, Hysteria 51 listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off.
How much?
50%. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off, unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your unnatural life.
Wow.
Redeem, redeem, redeem. How do they do it?
Rachete, you're 50% off. Rachete. Redeem it. 50% off, rosettastone.com/today. Do it today. Nation, we want pictures of your dogs. That's just a personal request from me, but while you look for a good one, let me tell you about something near and dear to mine and Brent's hearts, your dog's health. You may have noticed lots of dogs suffering from health issues these days, joints, odors, it's not good. Actress Katherine Heigl noticed these issues too, and after a ton of research, there was one place she found we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she created Superfood Complete, food for your four-legged friend that's made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Her company, Badlands Ranch, also supports the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. Now, I know Brent has used Superfood Complete with his lovable meatballs, and they absolutely love it. He said it's easy to prepare, both his guys grow crazy for it, and he loves knowing what he's giving them is healthy and full of ingredients that are actually beneficial to his little rapscallions. You can try it for yourself by going to badlandsranch.com/hysteria and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular priced order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to badlandsranch.com/hysteria today.
Oh yeah, R. You gonna finish that dress? No. Yeah, just leave it. John, this isn't any.
You know what a pirate's favorite element on the periodic table is?
What is it?
Argon.
No, really?
Do you know a pirate's favorite letter in the alphabet?
What's that?
Can you guess?
B.
No.
What is it?
Well, you'd think it'd be R. But no, 'tis the sea they love.
Oh. Mine is funnier.
Do you know what a pirate's favorite rating for a movie is? NC-17, because they like titties.
Jesus.
Oh, boy.
All right, so back on the Mary Celeste. She had a shady past before all of this happened.
Like most of the women in your life. Story.
Yes, shady, shady past. Producer Lisa really, really loves that joke. She's smiling back there. That's a smile.
I said most.
Oh.
It did. I did not say whom.
She was originally named Amazon. Now that's the ship, not my wife. just clarifying there.
Switching gears a little bit.
You got me with that one.
It was actually renamed after a bunch of mishaps, including sudden illness and death of its first captain and a collision with another ship in the English Channel. So this thing was just...
Should have named it Lucky.
Yeah, right?
So they built this thing. It goes out for its first voyage. The captain says, I don't feel well. It actually has to return to where it came from, and he died of...
Missing the sea.
like scarlet fever or pneumonia or something.
Some scarlet fever sounds good. Let's go with that.
Yeah. A handful of days later.
My mother had scarlet fever. She was bedridden for 9 months while she was in high school.
Wow.
Was she in Victorian England?
Yeah, right. it messes with your heart, so she had had to be careful for the rest of her life. Yeah,
that's, scarlet fever. That's no fun.
Man.
So then later, a few years later, it's just leaving a port in the English Channel, runs into another ship and sinks it.
Right.
Like this.
Sinks the other ship.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of weird, bad stuff happened to this ship in a pretty short amount of time.
They're like, I don't think the Amazon is a really good ship. We're not going to get rid of it. We're just going to rename it.
Slap a new coat of paint on her.
You know, though, they say renaming a ship is bad luck unless it's done right. And I tend to think they didn't do it right. I actually looked it up because you want to make sure you know how to do it. So we're going to teach everyone how to rename a ship.
Wow.
First, you remove any trace of the old name. That includes, keychains, which really wouldn't have been a thing then. Hull logos, life rings that might have the name on it. Sail bag tags, anything that had the name on it.
Fine China.
Get rid of it. Finest of China. Then number two, you perform a ceremony. Choose your own adventure there.
I can handle that one.
Form a ceremony. Kalima, I must.
Like an ancient pagan ritual.
Then you make a sacrifice, and that sacrifice isn't as ominous as it sounds. It really just means you smash a bottle of
Vestal
alcohol.
Virgin.
Smash a bottle of alcohol on the hole.
You hear some chanting going on.
Knock
on the door. What's going on in there? We're renaming the vessel. Don't worry about it. You walk in. What are you doing? Why is there a dead body right there?
We're
I said a sacrifice.
The vessel.
We need to break a bottle of alcohol. Oh, Ted, you got me. No, that's got my me, dead Ted. Daughter. Guess we didn't need to do that, huh? Just a bottle of champagne. You win this one, Ted.
So wait, you sacrifice a bottle of alcohol?
Yeah, you just smash it on the hole.
What the fuck?
Yeah.
C-Bot would prefer the daughter.
Right.
Yeah.
And then the fourth, you just rename it ASAP. You got to get that name on there. Put it in Sharpie. It's fine.
Just get it on there.
Otherwise, though, literally, and this has been since way back when, they said a lifetime of bad luck and disaster would happen to the ship.
There is so much superstition when it comes to sailing. Mm-hmm. Do you know you're not supposed to leave on a voyage on a Friday? It's really bad luck.
Really?
Not supposed to have a woman aboard.
No, you're not supposed to have a woman. And you know how sailors are traditionally thought to be like tatted up with earrings?
Mm-hmm.
That's all like, it's good luck to have tats. It's good luck to have earrings.
Sea mom!
I told you not to be a sailor.
Well, if she was a sea mom, she would have known that.
Sea mom! Sea mom!
But there's a tremendous amount of superstition. Bye, sea mom.
Where is sea bot?
Right behind you.
Where's the cousin?
Nowhere near the
hopefully,
sea. I'll tell you that.
In the sea.
Yeah, we'd love that, but he
bubbling
won't,
as he sinks.
He won't get anywhere close. He won't get close to the bathtub.
Yar.
That's just cause I know what John does in there.
I'm gonna put you in the bathtub.
Get close, and I'll fucking cut you.
One lump or two.
Let me grab that booty.
All right. So the actually was an investigation into whether payment for the grant by the insurance of the Celeste was actually going to pay the De Gratia, their crew for salvaging the ghost ship, but they found no evidence of foul play. And we'll get into the, what that means. Imagine finding a ship, then being tried for murder almost. Like, you find a ship and they're like, you know what? Great, we don't want to pay you, so let's look into your past.
I mean, maritime law, he who dealt it, killed it.
Yeah, that's who found it, murdered it.
Yeah.
You know, that's, I think, the way it goes. Her story doesn't stop there, though. Mary Celeste would pass from owner to owner over the next 12 years. Then, because all good captains tend to do this.
You know, all good captains go to heaven.
Her last captain deliberately ran her aground in Haiti as part of an attempted insurance fraud. So she had that going for her. John, tell us a little bit more about the actual story.
That's how I get rid of every car.
Yeah, just running around in Haiti. It's the hardest thing. Getting it there is hard. But once it's there, it stays.
And I make a lot of money on insurance.
Yeah. Here's tell us about her crew, her life, things like that.
Let's talk about the actual Mary Celeste and the crew that surrounded the event that we're going into today. The captain was named Captain Benjamin Briggs. He was from Wareham, Massachusetts, born in 1835, and he was one of five sons of a sea captain named Nathan Briggs.
That's Nathan Boom Boom Briggs, if you looked into it.
So the sea was in his blood. You just made that. Nathan Master of Mayhem Briggs.
Yeah. Yeah.
He was very sick because of that, by the way. I mean, when sea gets in your blood.
Oh, you got sea in your blood. I think you should do cocaine about it. That's what the doctor told him at the time.
So, and his dad, it said later, so this is an interesting aside to the story. His dad had lost a ton of money making a big investment when they were all kids. He and his brother, Captain Boom Boom Briggs, were about to make an investment into a hardware store.
And I believe it's pronounced hardware.
Hardware.
Maybe
wear a mask.
At the last minute, he pulled out and instead and never had a kid. He pulled out and did not make that investment and instead invested in the Mary Celeste and became her captain. So that was kind of
put in a large amount of money.
His
life savings.
In 1862, he married his cousin, Sarah Elizabeth Cobb, because, you know, that's not weird.
Yeah,
you
do.
Yeah. They then, of course, had two inbred children. I shouldn't say
Arthur
that.
Arthur Old did have Flipper
two.
Was the boy.
Yes.
He was born in 1865, and the daughter, Sophie One-Eyed Matilda.
in 1870.
Funnily enough, One Eye was just a nickname.
Yeah.
She actually had 3 years.
So they buy, you know, he's in the Mary Celeste. He's going to take her out on her first voyage after an extensive refit. And they're going to go to Genoa, as I mentioned before, to get some salami. Mm-hmm. But then also to bring the denatured alcohol. An important part to this story is the wife / cousin and daughter come along. They leave Flipper at home, Arthur, because this is the way the story goes. He's in school and they don't want to disturb it.
Which seems weird because old Flipper would have been born for the sea, one would think. Yeah.
I love the idea of him like coming home from school and be like, Ma, Dad, where are you guys? Come on.
It's not funny.
He didn't have a flipper, though, but he was born, this is true, though, with only one eye. And back in the day, at that time, they would put a wooden eye in as, like, I think they use, like, ceramics and stuff now. He wanted to marry the neighbor girl who had a hunchback. And I guess at that time, like, the families talk and they work those things out. The problem was he went over to ask for her hand in marriage, and he said,
she just gave it to him.
Would you marry me? And she goes, would I? He goes, fuck you, hunchback! And they never got married.
Jesus, that was elaborate.
This whole fucking thing.
A 5-minute setup.
That joke was bigger than a Walmart.
If you place a picture side by side,
this is your fault.
Maybe you guys didn't read the pages I read.
This is your fault.
Obviously, the two. I did more research than both of you.
regardless of that, he leaves his son, he takes his wife and daughter on the ship, and they get going. Also, they had a decent crew. A later testimonial described them as peaceable and first-class sailors.
Yeah, some he had sailed with, they family, when they'd write letter, would say, like, hey, they seem like they know what they're doing. Sarah actually informed her mother that the crew appeared to be quite capable if they continue as they become. She was actually quoted as saying, no way will they rape and kill us and scuttle the ship and leave it to a mystery for the ages. So they had that going for them.
Perfect. Perfect. All right, Brent, we should go to a break, but when we come back, let's talk about what the evidence suggests actually happened.
Yeah, we've done a lot about talking about nothing. Let's get to what happened and all that shit. What does the evidence actually suggest?
Probably a learning disability and prominent physical deformities.
The ship! Not the
product of your cousins, Marion, no.
That's coming up on Hysteria 51. I don't know, man. Cousins shouldn't fuck. They shouldn't, let alone Marion.
Probably true. Well, first cousins.
After years of fine print contracts and getting ripped off by overpriced wireless providers, if we've learned anything, it's that there's always a catch. So when Brent and I heard that for a limited time, all Mint Mobile wireless plans are $15 a month when you purchase a 3-month plan, we thought, man, what's the catch? But after talking to them, it all made sense. There isn't one. Mint Mobile's secret sauce is that they sell wireless service online. They cut out the cost of retail stores and pass those sweet savings directly to you. Brent is trying a plan right now and says that it works like a charm from Chicago to Nashville as he makes his big old move. Mint Mobile is working for him. All plans come with high-speed data and unlimited talk and text delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. And you can use your own phone with any Mint Mobile plan and bring your phone number along with all your existing contacts. So ditch the overpriced wireless with Mint Mobile's limited time deal and get 3 months of premium wireless service for $15 a month. To get this new customer offer and your new 3-month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/hysteria. That's mintmobile, mintmobile.com/hysteria, hysteria. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/hysteria. $45 upfront payment required. New customers on first 3-month plan only. Speed slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for details.
Deliverance. Here's the thing. I want to know how many people do 23andMe. You know, it gives you back like, hey, your fifth cousin. Did you know that your fifth cousin lives, you know, 2 hours away from you? Like, you find out who
my
all these people are.
Fifth cousins, actually, I think, like, you can pound away.
We are all, I agree. We're all cousins.
Technically,
to, but,
yes.
I mean,
scientifically, that's
you know,
how
like,
it's put.
Get, like, the 63rd cousin. Like, I mean,
right,
you know.
Right. Like,
but I want to know how many times it's happened that, like, people, honest to goodness, no idea. You turn it in and it tells you, there's somebody in my city. And then, you know, you find out who that person is. My first cousin is my wife or my whatever. Mm-hmm. You know that's happened.
Like, you were adopted.
Right.
You know
right,
what
right,
I mean?
Right.
Stuff like that.
That casts a shadow over the marriage.
Yeah. They call that the old Kentucky set, or I don't know. I don't even know. Shouldn't
the
say
old
that.
Kentucky fill in the blank.
Yeah.
It's a Mad Libs.
give me an adjective. Give me a noun.
All right. Back to the scary ship, kids. Let's dive back into the Mary Celeste.
It's a scary ship.
Yeah. This bitch is loaded October 20th, 1872. 1,701 barrels of poisonous denatured alcohol. And on Tuesday morning, November 5th, Mary Celeste left Pier 50 with Briggs, his wife and daughter, and the 7 crew members, and moved into New York Harbor. We say they moved to New York Harbor because a storm came a-brewing, and they're like, well, we probably shouldn't try to sail through that. So they drop anchor just off of Staten Island, and they waited it out. And that actually was the time the last letter from them was written. Sarah, because of the delay, wrote her mother-in-law a letter, and it was quoted as saying, tell Arthur I make great dependences on the letters I shall get from him, and will try to remember anything that happens on the voyage, which he would be pleased to hear. So finally, on the 7th, the weather clears, and away they went. What'd they do then, John?
Well, it should be pointed out that the Del Gradia, who ended up finding them, was actually nearby in Hoboken, New Jersey, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, the point is the captains had common interest and actually knew each other.
Like you said, they if you're a captain at that time in a small area, you're probably your drinking buddies or something along those lines.
Some stories even say that Morehouse, Briggs, and one other captain had dinner the night before the Mary Celeste left
to hatch
harbor.
A plan. I mean, say good luck to one another.
The evidence that actually happened is somewhat limited.
Conjecture, Your Honor.
Yeah. Sustained.
And, you know, a lot of it actually came from Morehouse's widow a number of years after the fact.
And you know how women lie.
Stop it. Just stop it. The Del Gradia departed for Gibraltar on November 15th, 8 days after the Mary Celeste, following the same general route.
Yeah. Yeah. So they're just kind of following behind them.
They were headed for Gibraltar.
Yeah.
The Celeste was headed for Genoa. Then some stuff happened.
Yeah. Yeah. Halfway between the Azores and the coast of Portugal, about 1 p.m. on Wednesday, December 4th of 1872, the helmsman reported a vessel about 6 miles distant heading towards the De Gracia. The ship was moving erratic and his sails looked odd to the captain, the Morehouse, and he thought something was probably wrong. Now, I say moving erratic, it was kind of just drifting. And the sails
were coming right for us.
The sails were only like halfway up. As they got close, he could see
half
nobody
mast.
On deck. Ooh, I'm half mast all the time. He could see nobody on deck and he received no reply from the signal, which was, "Are you there? You okay?" And he got nothing back.
"I'm sorry. Is anyone there?"
"Sorry. Sorry. Sorry." Captain sent DeVoe, he's like the first mate of his ship, and second mate John Wright. These are two people that were on the crew. He respected. He goes, "Hey, go check and see what's going on over there." And they found that it was the Celeste, and they found that it was deserted. But things were not terrible, but awry, I think is the best way to
weird.
Say it. Yeah. The sails, like we said, were partially set. That's why it looked weird from a distance. They were in poor condition. Some of them were missing altogether.
So if the ship had, I think, like 5 sails, 3 were still up, 2 were just like broken or on the ground.
And the riggings were damaged, and the ropes were hanging loosely over the sides, one of which, like you said, different rope, was hanging off the back of the boat and frayed like it had been cut or snapped. The main hatch also, the cover for it, was secure, but the forward and the rear, or the lazarette hatches, were open, and their covers were beside them on the deck.
Like they had been blown open.
Right. And the single lifeboat, it was gone. It was completely missing.
Where's the yowl?
Yeah. Also, the ship's compass had shifted from its place, and the glass over it was broken, shattered. And here's the other thing. Not enough water to sink it. But a lot, 3.5 feet of water were inside the hull of the ship.
And what do they call that? The bilges?
And then there is the ship's log. The last entry in the ship's daily log in the mate's cabin was dated 8 a.m. on November 25th, 10 days earlier.
That's a week in maritime.
That's right. That's right. It recorded Mary Celeste's position at 37 degrees 1 north, 25 degrees 1 west off Santa Maria Island in the Azores. The fact of that is, that's nearly 400 nautical miles from the point where they found her. So, if that's true, she'd been doing some drifting. She'd been out to sea.
Tokyo drifting.
I
don't think that's what he meant.
Vroom, vroom. They also saw that the cabin interiors were wet, messy, from water that had entered through doorways and skylights that were open. But others were fine, and they weren't trashed. Everything that was supposed to be there was there. It was just wet. It's like a men's bathroom. Everything's wet. You know? Then in Briggs, the captain's cabin, they found personal items scattered about, including a sheathed sword under his bed.
Ah, superstition. Never have a sheathed sword under your bed on a ship.
But most of the ship's papers were missing, together with the captain's navigational instruments.
Yeah, so there was a lot of maps missing, and the kind of paperwork that you were leaving
you
might grab on your way out. Mm-hmm. The sextant was missing.
I should have bought that sextant.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you should have. You should have. There's a few other pieces of navigational equipment were missing as well.
Right.
The compass was still there, but as you said, it was broken.
But then here's the odd part, too. The galley, the equipment, everything was neatly stowed away. There was no food prepared or under preparation, but for all intents and purposes, everything was still there.
There was still tons of food there. Yeah. It's not like they took
like, well, we better prepare to go, or if they got on another ship where they would need the, I guess, do you really need your navigational stuff to get into a lifeboat and try to row? I mean, maybe, I don't know.
If you're getting navigational equipment, you would think you're planning for a longer trip.
Which is one of the strange things about this, because where the Delgratia found it, even going back to where they say it was, you could see land. It was really far away, but it was, you could see the Azores themselves.
Yeah, they said that they thought that they were really close at one point, but they were actually like 120 miles away. So that's one of the things. Maybe they hopped into the boat and they're like, oh, we can get there. And they're like, shit. Oh, shit.
Well, like, they said
this sextant was upside down.
Yeah.
Oh, just you zooms, bastard.
Zooms out on a huge, open, calm sea.
The log did say that they had spotted land. So whatever decision they made or didn't make.
Spotted land is just an English dish.
Have it for breakfast.
Yeah.
That's all that meant.
Part of your full English breakfast.
Spotted land and beans, please.
With some blood sausage.
Spotted land and sextant, please.
So, like you said, Brent, there weren't like signs of distress. There was
no
fire
or
violence.
Yeah. Unfortunately, though, they left the shit open.
But the sounding rod, which is what they use to check out how deep the water is in the bilge, was not in its like place. Wherever you keep the sounding rod, it was just left on the on the deck. Mm-hmm. It was just so it had been dropped wherever it was when they decided
they had been
to leave.
Using it.
Yes, they had been using it.
Yeah, to check the
and it wasn't put away.
Water. Right.
Right.
Now remember that investigation into the crew we talked about of the Degratia or the Gratia, whichever you want to say. So under maritime law, this is important. A salver could expect a substantial share of the combined value of rescued vessel and cargo. The exact award depends kind of on the degree of danger inherent in the salvaging. So if he fought off Somali pirates, he'd get a little bit more than if he just ran up and found it. And that was what Morehouse wanted. He saw this and he's like, hold up. Time out.
Listen, I know my good friend Captain Briggs is dead, likely along with his wife and child and crew, but I'm going to make some money on this.
Yeah.
Find his keepers, boys.
He's headed to Gibraltar. He's like, we're bringing both of these with us. So it's 600 nautical miles away and back to get to Gibraltar. So Morehouse divides his crew of eight between the two ships, which has to be
four.
Hard.
Actually,
he kept five with him, four in him, and then sent three to the other one.
Three to the end.
Yeah, because I'm not doing my work. He sent two experienced guys and another one to the Mary Celeste.
Yeah, DeVoe is one of them. Mm-hmm. Yep.
And luckily, the weather was calm pretty much all the way to Gibraltar, almost. And they were undermanned, so it took a long time, but they reached Gibraltar on December 12th of 72. The Mary Celeste had encountered some fog, so they actually were a little bit behind, and they came in the next morning. And she's immediately impounded, because that's what they do. The Vice Admiral Court has to prepare for salvage.
It must have been
hearings.
A nervous time.
Like, bringing
it in. You show up, and like, well, where's the other one?
Right.
Where, and, you know, the next
they're
morning,
not,
that's
they're a, not calling you on
right.
radio.
It's a while to wait.
DeVoe, now he was the first mate from the ship, wrote to his wife that the ordeal of bringing the ship in was such that, quote, I can hardly tell what I am made of, but I do not care so long as I got it in safe. I shall be well paid for the Mary Celeste.
He's made of cheese.
Hmm. So they go to salvage court. Tell us about that, John.
Salvage court.
Now you
dun, dun.
You used to watch salvage court, right, in the 80s?
All the time during the day. Yeah, when I was home from school.
Welcome to salvage court.
That's how Wapner got his start.
Wapner on salvage court.
We were all circling a Wapner joke there. No one knew exactly how to bring it in. So the hearing was conducted by Judge Wapner. No, it was conducted by a guy named Frederick Solly Flood.
Yeah. Well, he's...
That is a great
flood?
Name.
Frederick Solly Flood.
Tis a Solly Flood.
Attorney General of Gibraltar.
He was also Advocate General and Proctor for the Queen in her Office of Admiralty.
My God. Could you imagine being the guy that had to paint that on his door?
It's a big business card.
Right.
Ruin your hand muscles.
So historians have a particular view of Flood. He was described as a man whose, quote, arrogance and pomposity were inversely proportional to his IQ.
So, yeah, he was a high-feeling type who was an idiot.
Yeah. The sort of man who, once he had made up his mind about something, couldn't be shifted. The history looks at him kindly and fondly. Morehouse and his crew during this salvage court, they of course testified as to what happened. It was noted also during the investigation that there were cuts on each side of the bow caused, they said, by sharp instruments. And they also found possible traces of blood, they said, on the captain's sword.
But if I was the captain, I want to make sure my sword works. I've cut something.
Right, right. I mean, it's fair. I mean,
you find a blade in this house that doesn't have blood on it.
Fucking A.
I'll wait. I'll wait.
Authorities, you're listening now. Brent lives in. No. It was emphasized that the ship did not appear to have been struck by heavy weather, citing, you mentioned this before, a vial of sewing machine oil found upright in its place.
Yeah, God knows that the guys that were on that thing for a long time couldn't have set it back up as they were piloting back into the, you know, Gibraltar. But don't let things like that
do you. This is kind of like CSI.
Yeah. Oh.
Are you serious?
Won't be fooled again. Who are ye?
Instead of taking his glasses off, he takes his eye patch off.
Which is actually somehow less creepy than what's his name doing that. Yeah. They also discovered stains on the rails that might have been blood. Everything was potentially blood, together with a deep mark possibly caused by an axe. This is all what Solly Flood thought. They made him think that human wrongdoing led to whatever happened rather than a natural disaster or something.
The human
like
wrongdoing
that.
Is a very open thing to say. Human wrongdoing could have been murder. It could have been, oh, we don't know what we're doing. Hey, raise the sails. Do I use an axe? You know, like, I mean, it's just a crazy thing.
Well, I think what happened, and this is just a guess on my part. Obviously, I didn't know Mr. Solly Flood. They bring in a ship that's in really good shape for the most part. And the crew's gone like, oh, yeah, who knows what happened to the crew?
Yeah.
And he's like, that just doesn't sound, it doesn't sound likely to me. You guys obviously murdered these people and are trying to collect the damage bounty.
Everything's coming up, Morehouse.
And I'm going to stop it. And so no matter what facts came in, he twisted them to make it look like.
Well, and you're going to, like, with his conclusion, his reports that he'd sent to the Board of Trade in London, he added his conclusion that the crew had gotten to the alcohol, ignoring the fact that it was incoldable. It would have killed them.
Did you hear that, C-Bot? You cannot drink it.
I drink whatever I want.
Well, that's kind of humans true. Can't.
Yeah, yeah.
They do if they know how to party.
And he thought that they murdered the Briggs family and the ship's officers in a drunken frenzy, as one is to do. They had cut the bows to simulate a collision, then fled in the lifeboat to suffer an unknown fate.
I know when I get drunk, the first thing I want to do is fucking kill somebody.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You know what really good go good with this martini?
I'm off
death.
First degree
death.
Murder.
I'm also going to take my sword out, just hang over the side of the ship and scratch it up a bunch.
First mate, go to my cabin under my bed. Please.
Oh, no, you're not supposed to put it there, sir.
Just don't tell me it's sheathed.
Flood actually thought that Morehouse and his men were hiding something, specifically that Mary Celeste had been abandoned in a more easterly location and that the log had been doctored. He couldn't accept that the Mary Celeste had traveled that far. I call kind of horseshit on that because they're in open water. Why couldn't it have traveled that far?
Oh, it absolutely could. I mean, you have strong channels there that can just take a ship.
They find boats at sea that have been out there for. There's that one that guy died, and I forget, not too long ago, and it was like 5 years or something like that, mm-hmm. and someone finally found it, and they're like, oh, he had a heart attack.
Yeah.
Heart attack, died on the boat. He was like, certainly. Well,
and people have done the math on this that, you know, the channels are like highways. They don't change. They actually did the math on this, and it would have been very easy for it to have.
Trade winds catch you, and you go for a ride.
Yep.
You know, and that's just the way it goes. So Flood's theories of mutiny and murder received significant setbacks when they had, and I don't know what scientific analysis they did, but someone went,
They tasted it. Yes.
That's not blood.
Actually, if they did taste it, they would have known because they say that it was probably lemon juice. A thing back then. This is so anti-productive. They to help their swords before they sheathed them, they'd put lemon juice on the metal.
that's
not good for metal. No. But
in
that's
a pinch,
what
they peed on it.
That's what that's what discolored it.
But yeah, so it wasn't blood at all. Also, a report commissioned by Horatio Sprague, the American consul in Gibraltar, said that the marks on the bow were not man-made, but come from the natural actions of the sea on the ship's timber, like splitting. As it shifts, because these are giant, giant sails.
That's the point. They took a sword that had been covered in lemon juice and sheathed, and some marks on the bow that happened to any ship, and go, see, that's why there's been foul play here.
Well, luckily, Flood, he was just trying to, screw these guys over. It didn't stick, the things he said. They could find no concrete evidence at all to support his suspicions, so he was forced to release the Celeste from the court's jurisdiction on February 25th. So it was there for a couple solid months.
It was three months. The inquest list lasted 3 months, yeah. And by the way, while this was going on, Morehouse, he needed to send other pieces of his cargo on. Mm-hmm. And so he did. And he sent his first or second mate to do it. Solly Flood's like, oh, well, see, that's proof you're guilty. You just got rid of one of the witnesses. Right. Like, dude, we've been here for 3 months.
Right.
What do you want from me?
Right.
But
what he ends up getting out of this, Morehouse, really, is a tainted reputation and nothing is solved.
And they got money, but the salvage fee they got was like a tenth of what they, if he had brought it in and they go, oh, no problem, here's your salvage fee, it was like a tenth of that. Yeah. So it wasn't worth the juice wasn't worth the proverbial squeeze.
So, gentlemen, there's some things that you look at this story, you got to kind of think what could have caused this, because people were never seen from again. And the first one, I'd ask you, David, like foul play. What comes to mind when you think of foul play? What do you think could have happened?
Oh, murder, of course. Well, so like, yeah, I mean, you're at sea. There's marks, in the hull, some in places, on the bow, the axe mark, whatever sword is found. Like, of course you're going to think, well, mutiny is there somewhere, but that really doesn't add up with what was said by, the letters, mm-hmm. that were written before.
What you just said, the obvious foul play is mutiny or pirates coming and killing
pirates.
Them.
Pirates, yeah, yeah.
The other version of foul play would be them becoming pirates.
Right.
So there's another ship, a third ship that we haven't talked about, ship XYZ. They run up next to it. They pirate it.
Size.
Thank you. They run up against it, kill those people, steal it, and they take it, and whatever's on it is worth so much more money, they leave the Mary Celeste just to float away.
Right. Now, one other way you could look at foul play is Morehouse and Briggs were buddies, mm-hmm. and this was a very elaborate plan for insurance fraud.
Mm-hmm. Right.
They jumped on the ship was never found that way, and they let them off somewhere, and they lived their days off somewhere expecting this money from Morehouse, which he never really got mm-hmm. because they were bamboozled because of the weird nature of what had happened.
Because of Solly Flood.
And so they just lived their days off everywhere, and they let old Flippy live out his days in America because he was,
Meanwhile, he's still sitting at home like, is anybody coming home?
Yeah. Ort. Yeah.
Don't see any cars in the yard. Please come back.
Foul play is a possibility, but there's other possibilities. The foul play seems very unlikely given the
fact that the ship was
the
haunted.
Circumstantial evidence also them doing anything untoward with it. I think an important part of the story is that the wife and the daughter were on board.
Mm-hmm. If I was going to go with foul play on that, I think it would have to be something with the insurance fraud scheme.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, exactly.
These are also these people he was with, the crew that Briggs had picked are people, at least some of them he had worked with before.
And were, by all reports, not just reports,
known to be salty sea dogs.
By all reports, were pretty upstanding as far as sailors go in the 1800s.
So natural phenomenon is another one. To leave a perfectly good ship stock, though, shit has to have gone wrong fast in a hurry. Maybe a water spout they've talked about was coming, but why would you get out of that ship and get into a lifeboat unless you thought you could get away somehow?
So there's a reason that some people believe the water spout is a possibility.
Is it the rope?
The rope, along with the obviously the some of the sails having been down. Mm-hmm. But remember, we talked about the fore and the aft hatches being blown open. A water spout changes the relative pressure in the area that, like, yeah, a tornado does. So if the pressure changed, they could pop outward.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a possibility that would also lead to, you know, some extra water being in there. Not enough to sink it, but just enough mm-hmm. to be in there. On the flip side of that, I it would have to be a pretty weird and special water spout to do that stuff, but then not, like, tip everything else over.
Yeah.
Right. Right. And, you know, they always talk Seaquake could have thrown them overboard, you know, stuff like that.
There are multiple examples of Seaquakes doing lots of bad things mm-hmm. to ships, sinking them, but also just killing people on board.
Yep.
But again, it probably wouldn't look as pristine as it did.
Right, right. You know, unless it almost flipped it or something.
Right.
They would all have had to have been conveniently on deck for some reason.
All at the same time.
Which maybe that did happen. You know, do you want to spend all day under, you know, I don't know.
There's also something that came up when I was doing research on the Flannan Isles lighthouse, the mystery of that one, where some folks disappeared from the small island off the coast of Scotland. They talked about these things called rogue waves mm-hmm. that are just, you know, humongous
and
waves that kind of
have
look
recently
like they come
been
out of
proven to exist.
Absolutely, yeah, and they're very hard to study because you don't know where they are, where they come from, when they're going to form. It's very hard to kind of spot one, and they're so big, it's hard to get anywhere near to do any, you know,
which could account for just about every damn thing on there. Water in the hole, the hatches, the some of the masts being down, the hatches ripped off, the shattered compass, the and, other nautical things washed overboard.
Yeah,
possibly.
And if they, like you said, were all on deck, bye bye. You know, even you can't hold on against something like that.
Yeah, yeah. And the ship rights itself, and yeah, there you go.
Now, natural phenomena, whether it's a rogue wave, a sea quake, the water spout, all of that still doesn't sound right.
Right.
I don't think, based on, again, the evidence that was put forth, what the shape things were in when they boarded.
Yeah. One of my favorite ones that kind of ties it up nicely is, you were talking about the bilges and things like that. Pump congestion. She had a lot of water in the hole, 3.5 feet, an alarming amount, not enough to sink it. The Mary Celeste had actually been used to transport coal. That was her main job before this vessel, right, or this voyage. Coal dust gets everywhere, and the pump was found actually disassembled on the deck. That's an important part. The crew may have been attempting to repair it because it was full of coal dust congestion. And they think that since the hole was packed full, and you said the rod that they used to measure it was found above, you know, up on deck, the captain would have no way of judging how much water had been taken on board because he couldn't, if there was rough seas, he couldn't get down there and probe it. So he goes, oh, you know, we're screwed. They also had a chronometer on board, and they believed that it was faulty.
I'm sorry, what did you say?
Right? Meaning that Briggs
could dual spin tippler sinusoids.
Yes. thanks, T-Tour.
T-Tour.
Meaning that Briggs could have ordered abandoning the ship, thinking that they were close to sinking, and in fact, they weren't. It wasn't that much water in there. And also thinking that they were right by Santa Maria Island when actually they were 120 miles west of there.
Also, a little known fact in this case, they did not bring an altimeter with them.
That is true.
I think that's the biggest problem.
Yeah, well, I mean, where are we? Sea level, sir. Check it again.
I don't believe it.
Sea level, sir. Says sea level. Keep checking. Yes, sir.
I would like a report back on every half hour.
You got it. Other thing, we got to get this one in. Paranormal.
Aliens.
And the other thing, can a ship just be bad luck? I mean, this thing has had bad luck from the beginning.
Yeah, it's cursed.
Maybe it is cursed. There could have been a dimensional shift, the little wormhole. They went in, slide.
Yeah, the people.
They slid. Slid.
Did you see that post?
Slider's coming back. I know.
Slider's coming back.
Is it really?
Well, they're talking about, I don't know if it's a reboot. They use the real people, more like a restarting.
Will Jonathan Rhys Davies be a part of it?
He's one of the people that is wanting it. Yeah.
He was the best part.
Aliens. They just got abducted.
They got abducted by aliens.
It was an experience of the fourth kind, and they go, you know what? We're going to stay cocoon style. Take us to your planet. I want to not ever get sick. Other one that is probably really realistic and happened was the Kraken.
Kraken. Yeah. Sea monsters of some type came up from the depths.
Or the siren song of mermaids lulled them to their death.
But see, that's supposed to lull them with the ship to crash the ship, too.
No, they jumped. They
just jumped on the yowl and went. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Got it.
Carried on the wind.
Now, we know that it was a paranormal thing. Fact. But let's just say for a second.
it has an actual explanation.
there's a different explanation other than that. A really interesting one has to do with a flash explosion.
Pocket sand!
Let me walk you through this. So we mentioned before there were 1,701 barrels of denatured alcohol.
On the wall, 1,701 bottles of denatured alcohol.
Take one down, pass it around.
Suddenly you're gone.
Oh, shit. Dimensional rift.
I like that they stuck that one extra one. We can get one more.
One more.
Shove it in, lads.
What we haven't mentioned yet is 9 of those barrels were empty. The empty barrels are recorded as being made of red oak, as opposed to the rest of them, which were made of white oak. Why does that matter? Well, red oak is known to be a more porous wood than white oak.
Porous.
Yes. Porous. It gives it a chance more likely to leak. I mean, in 9 barrels, there's something like 3,000 gallons or something. 1,000? I don't know. I'm messing my
There's a lot of alcohol.
There's a lot of alcohol there.
How many hogsheads?
And it's in a hold that is not airtight, but, you know, certainly enclosed. So there's a theory that, you know, I mean, these people are smoking pipes and there's lots of, I mean, yeah, you have coal fires to cook your food. And there is a theory that goes that these fumes or vapors from the red oak barrels built up, somebody goes down, you know, lights a pipe or whatever, and there's a flash fireball. Nothing that's going to actually kill anyone or destroy the ship. Just the kind of fireball, like when you see people like blow a fireball in college.
Yeah.
It's very interesting looking, makes a sound, and nothing really happens. Well, Captain Briggs, again, had his daughter and his wife. So if they're smelling this smell and this huge fireball and it blows open the fore and the aft.
Abandoned ship.
Yeah. Guys, let's get out of here.
Abandoned ship.
You mentioned before the rope that was trailing behind.
We don't have time, sir.
So
I've killed your daughter. You're next because I love you, sir. Always have.
And now for myself. Wait, got to get these bodies overboard.
So
blood on the railing.
The thought process is...
Hold up for a second. Sorry, keep going.
Oh, wait, if I keep going here, he's just going to interrupt me.
No, not at all. It's out of my system.
Okay, good.
Like the denatured alcohol,
right. So the thought process is that he's basically just frightened for his family's life. So they all hop on, it's only 10 people. They hop on the lifeboat. Mm-hmm. They leave some of the sails up so it keeps going in the right direction.
They tie a rope
to the lifeboat and basically just float behind it in case it explodes.
Yeah.
Until they get there or get close or whatever.
My dad did that with a Bronco we had in the 90s. Just let it keep going. We'll be back here.
Or to let it air out or whatever it needed to do.
Here's the problem. That rope breaks. You are on a lifeboat with conceivably no oars.
What a horrible feeling! You just watch.
That's exactly. Right. And so there,
you're watching the Jeep go on while you're on your hoverboard, and you've let go.
Yes, exactly.
Biff Tannen's behind you,
and so they just were lost to the sea. Eventually,
they were stewed butt wad, is what you're getting at.
They were what?
It's from your stewed butt wad. Sorry, keep going.
Oh, thank you. So they're eventually, I mean, the lifeboat's not going to make it out there in the middle of the Atlantic. They're lost to the sea. In swoops the De Gratia. And like, oh, wow, there's no one on here. Where'd they go?
It's really incredible that people piece those things together. That's a really realistic thing that could happen.
In 2006, the College of London, I might have that wrong. Some university in London tried to recreate the fireball. This had been a theory for a long time about the Mary Celeste, but it was dismissed because there was no sign of like scorching or anything like that. And what they proved recreating this fireball was that you could have a really flashy, big explosion and not actually damage anything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so that's why, it, again,
plus,
it might be
everything down there is wet, too.
Yeah. It's a great point. So it might not be as damaging as they thought. And so that's why it became a theory again. So that's another thing.
I like that one. That one kind of trims it up for me. I think it's way more likely something like that happened, and it's easy to just blame things on, oh, men are evil, but I would have probably tried to salvage it too. I don't know. What are you guys' thoughts?
I like the idea of
aliens.
Getting off the boat to let it either air out or they're afraid of it exploding, and then a squall blows up. You know, some bad weather comes up. It snaps the rope because of rough seas, probably high waves smashing the ship right and left, gets the water in the hold. It tears up the rigging, and then you're just left with, you know, the disheveled remains of a unlucky ship. And no survivors in a lifeboat lost to sea.
A series of bad events, one on top of one another.
Mm-hmm. An unfortunate series of events.
Yeah.
I'm with you. Whether it was a fireball or whether it was some other fear of something else happening on the ship. Maybe there was, them seeing the water. Maybe they just thought, maybe they weren't great sailors and they kind of thought it was sinking, you know, and they wanted to, hey, just in case, let's float behind it for a while. And we'll just keep our eye on it. And hopefully there's nothing wrong and we'll get back on the ship. Mm-hmm. Just not thinking that if this one rope, this one lifeline detaches, we're screwed. And it did. Whether it was a squall, like you said, or whether the rope just broke.
Yeah.
I'll give you something to squall about.
I mean, it's weird to get in a lifeboat, tie it to a ship that's still got some masts up.
Yeah, why not put them down and let it sit? Why not drop anchor?
I was saying masts. I mean sails. Still, like either. And if not, drop anchor. Just at least tie up the sails so that it's not. You don't have that
you're not
pressure.
Going skiing.
Yeah. You're.
Oh, the pressure on the rope. You mean
the pressure on the rope to? And besides, you. I mean, I get it. You can put a stick on the wheel to keep it from, turning or whatever and set it in a certain direction. But that's pretty irresponsible, even for dumb sailors. You know what I mean? Like, you still need to control where you're going a little bit when you're out there.
Well,
unless they don't think they're going to be out there for
or unless they left in a hurry.
Yeah.
I mean, there is the possibility that after, like, if there was that fireball, it's like, abandoned ship.
Yeah,
like,
because if the rest of it goes up, that's a problem.
Right, right, because that's an explosion.
Yeah.
You're done. You're cooked. It's not like a fire. You're immediately done. So let's get the fuck off of this thing as soon as possible. Not really thinking that the sails being up is one way or the other.
Yeah.
You just know that you're going to die if you don't abandon ship. I don't know. I mean, it's all supposition. That's the really cool thing about this story. Not that people likely died.
Right.
But that we'll never know.
Probably not. And then just blame it on the dipshit that ordered the red oak barrels.
Right. Like, it's crazy. Only 9 of them. Well, thankfully, I guess. Right. You know,
and they were empty, weren't they? Didn't
they were completely
Yeah, they were empty.
That's weird, too.
That's it. The vapors just over, like just continuing to seep out, you know.
Plus, they might have been filled pre, and they could have been low when they went in there, maybe not even realized it,
right?
You know, as they were sitting in
that was
a warehouse, a dock, something like
Ted
that.
Ted in procurement. Nobody's blamed Ted in procurement. Right. Like, oh, you mean I wasn't supposed to buy the red oak? They were cheaper.
Yeah.
So that's our thoughts on this. Nation, what do you guys think? How can they tell us, John?
Hop on Hysteria Nation. That is our Facebook discussion group. Go to Facebook, search Hysteria Nation. Where we'll talk about this episode and a whole lot more.
Also, you can be on Facebook.com/Hysteria51.
It's our regular page.
Yeah, actually, it's Hysteria 51 Pod.
It's our regular page where we will update all of the new episodes.
That's right. At Hysteria 51 Pod, if you're on Twitter, look us up on Instagram if you're into the gram. patreon.com/hysteria51. You can find all sorts of extra episodes And
Brent was into the Gram in the '80s.
Fun things. Yeah. You know, me snorted up in my primitive years.
Please don't be into the Gram in my bathroom.
Voicemail. You want to hear yourself on the show? 773-669-7277. Again, 773-669-7277. Let's throw one at him. We're over on time, but let's do one real quick. John, how's that sound?
I can't wait.
Hey, what's up, guys? This is Rob. I'm calling from the bourbon capital of the world, Barstown, Kentucky. I just want to say I love the show. I'm a relatively new listener and trying to get caught up on some of the old episodes. But while going through some of the episode titles, I realized maybe I probably shouldn't do that after drinking bourbon because I came across one that says alien implants, and I thought the damn thing said penile implants. I'm like, what the fuck? I don't want to listen to two guys talk about how to get broken dicks to stand up.
It was a weird season.
I realized the error of my ways, and I was like, okay, yeah, I'll listen. Pretty good. But anyway, just want to let y'all know, keep up the good work.
Sweet.
Try to get some more of them goddamn flat earthers on there. That shit's the funniest stuff I've ever heard in my life. Anyway, keep up the good work. And see you, bye. Go fuck yourself.
And funnily enough, next week on Hysteria 51, penile implant.
Well, you know, he actually knew that David was going to be on today. And to the kind listener that just left that voicemail, I want to say that the opinions of bad things about Kentucky are Brent's and Brent's alone.
Oh, no, they're not mine alone. I love Kentucky. I used to work in Paducah when I was in college.
Paducah.
Every time I say it, a fireball flies out. Paducah! All right. So, David, thank you so much for being on again. Our intrepid Kentucky-born podcast friend in the lower fourth. Blurry Photos. Tell them about it.
I will. And thanks again for having me on. It's always a pleasure, guys.
It's a blast.
Yeah, of course, you can go to blurryphotos.org. to find all of my past episodes, 200 plus odd episodes on there. Lots of fun stuff. Big variety. Apple Podcasts. I'm on there. All the podcatchers should be on that stuff. Blurry Photos podcast on the, what is it, apostrophe Gram?
Yes.
I'm on the Gram.
The Gram.
Blurry _ photos on Twitter. And yeah, it's fun to be on here. Check these guys out. They were on a not too long ago episode
within the year, maybe about a year.
At least. Yeah. Talking about the hollow moon. That was a fun time.
That the moon is hollow.
talking about the solid data. Statistics.
We're talking about your uncle, David Icke, is what we were doing on that one. How is he?
Oh, he is as crazy as, you would want.
Crazy as a Spring Hill Jack.
Crazy as crazier than a jack slap. So yeah, come listen to me be worse than a brute on
gotcha, bitch.
Blurry Photos.
Oh, so with that said, I've been Brent.
I've been David.
I've been John.
He's been Conspiracy Bud.
Stay woke, meet sex.
It was terrible. It was just terrible. I'll never get over it as long as I live.
That's it for another edition of Hysteria 51. John and Brent will be back next week with yet more of the unexplained, the unexplored, and the unheard of. Oh, if it's unheard of, how will they know about it? Anyway, if you want to suggest a topic, give us your thoughts, or just make fun of Conspiracy Bot, that's my favourite, join us in our Facebook discussion group, Hysteria Nation. Just log on to Facebook and search Hysteria Nation, or you can always tweet us at Hysteria51Pod.
You've been listening to a fourth-hand joint.